Chapter 11, Life on Earth. September 30th, Earth. I slammed the door to my room while yelling that nobody understands me. It's a fact. Mom is mad at me because I've been moody lately. Dad says it's just hormones and that he went through the same thing when he was my age. Yeah, I don't think so, Dad. Okay, I get that you hated history too and that you were much more interested in girls than school but were too shy to do much about it. But none of us want to hear about your first crush on Margaret Hartman and how you would leave anonymous love letters in her desk because you couldn't get up the nerve to talk to her. I mean, it doesn't help me to know that this inability to talk to girls is hereditary, and I genuinely believe that Mom's going to make you sleep in the backyard if you mention Margaret's name one more time. But trust me, you do not get it. Your teenage life might have been miserable, but you did not have to dream about being a prisoner when you slept. Oh, it's been a while since I've written in this journal. Didn't I mention that little nugget of information? Well, I may as well write it down now since I'm locked in my room with my phone taken away and the Wi-Fi password changed. Mom and Dad might not grok how severe this punishment is to my generation since they were born before the internet, but they sure know how to met it out. I wonder how their parents punished them. Perhaps they had to milk the cows and feed the chickens, or maybe they had to walk the family T-Rex. I yelled that last bit through my door, and they're probably wondering what I'm talking about. Yelling did make me feel a little better, though, as did picturing my dad walking a dinosaur and picking up its poop. I mean, you'd need one of those humongous black leaf bags, right? But let me bring you up to speed about Mirth. That night we destroyed the bridge was amazing. We sat up half the night reliving it until Tara insisted that we had to go to sleep because we still needed to leave in the morning. She said that it would take the Septumculums a few weeks to get their army across the river and mount an attack, but that they would immediately organize patrols to search for us. There was no way we could avoid them all if we waited. She had a destination in mind, but we all groaned when we heard it. She wanted us to go back to the training camp in the valley with the cave. Neither Janice nor I wanted to make that trip again, and the girls wanted nothing to do with the prophecy. Tara said that we could go our separate ways once we got there, but that we needed a haven and that we needed to get the two talismans to the trainers, even if we decided to quit after dropping them off. We knew she was right, but we still didn't like it. Also, Narayana pointed out that traveling through the magical wasteland might not be so bad for Janice and me because of our talisman tattoos, but that they didn't have any magic batteries. Tara even had an answer for that. She asked Juice if she could have 3 old fist-sized dragon stones, which she found in his nest. He said, sure, and she took them outside with some tools from her knapsack. She expertly cut them into multifaceted gems in a matter of minutes. One gemstone was shaped like a heart, another like a diamond, and a third like a multifaceted globe. Tara explained that cutting and polishing dragon stones had more of an effect than just causing them to glitter and sparkle. It exponentially increased their power due to internal reflections. I'm not sure what she meant, but they sure look beautiful. Versera took the heart-shaped gem, Narayana took the diamond, and Tara handed Alisa the sphere. Tara then transferred the jewels onto the girls as tattoos, just like she had done to us with the talismans. There, now you can survive for years without any external magical energy, she proudly proclaimed. The girls were pleased to have the jewels and their power, and we realized we had run out of arguments to stay. Neither Safe nor Juice was strong enough to fly us there, so we needed to leave in the morning and make the trip on foot. The girls had one more demand before agreeing to leave, though. They wanted to know how to remember their Mirth dreams when they awoke on Earth. Tara said that the way to remember Mirth is to focus all your thoughts on one person or experience or specific Mirth element which is important to you before going to sleep. She suggested that if they considered Earth as the dream and tried to force themselves to dream about a specific topic when they fell asleep on Mirth, it just might be enough to cause them to remember a little when they awoke on Earth. They might recall more and more about Mirth each time if they kept working on it. That kind of made sense to me, but it also made me a bit anxious. I mean, what if it turns out that Mirth is real and Earth is the dream? My life on Earth would certainly be a lame dream for someone living on a magical planet. Oh well, not my problem. So we finished packing and went to bed. which means that we went to bed while Tara finished packing. We really didn't own anything we weren't already carrying, but Tara had come prepared. She had a week's worth of meals, individually wrapped and shrunk to fit into a single backpack. I know she says she doesn't have any kids, but she sure seems to have the mom gene. We said our goodbyes and left in the morning. Departing was especially painful for the girls and the dragon babies, but Safe promised they would all fly to meet us in a few weeks. Juice's family was not going to be safe here for long either. Tara claimed to have traveled to the valley many times over the years and knew several backwoods routes to avoid any patrols. The six of us reached the overgrown path at the bottom of the hill and looked back toward Juice's cave. It was completely hidden, but we knew what was there near the hilltop, and it almost seemed as though we could sense the dragon family sadly crawling back into their cave. We felt like we were leaving home. Tara led us down the path towards the cave valley, and 3 hours later, we were prisoners. No, we weren't caught by a Septumclan patrol. We were captured by the Latians. Another group of people we didn't even know existed. They tied our hands, put bags over our heads, and dragged us for miles over hills and through valleys until we reached their village. Don't worry if you didn't see that coming. We didn't either. We then spent the rest of the week sitting in a windowless hut with no conversations with our captors beyond grunts as they slid food to us under the door. I don't know how long they'll keep us here, but those first few minutes after waking up here on Earth were fantastic. Of course, that joy went away as soon as I remembered the reality of my so-called real life, coupled with the fact that I now also get to dread my next mirth dream of prison. Dad knocked on my door and came in. He evidently drew the short straw to have a talk with the moody teenager. I told him that I didn't want to talk, but wasn't surprised when he sat down anyway. "What's going on, Marius?" he asked. "All week long you've been behaving strangely, and your mother is concerned." "Nothing," I grunted. "Go away. I have to do my homework." "Take a break and talk to me for a minute." I said, "I can't. This is an extra credit project for history, which, as you recall, is the subject I'm failing." The real reason I couldn't take a break, however, was that I had just been sulking in my room, and you can't pause something you haven't even started. I wasn't going to tell Dad that, though. He said, "Hey, I hated history, too. You just have to power through it, and who knows, maybe you'll find something you like about it." "So, you're saying that now you like history?" I asked. "Nah, I still find it boring, but I did manage to pass and move on to things that do interest me. Besides, I also hated gym class, and now I pay hundreds of dollars a year to belong to a gym to do the same things we did for free in school," Dad laughed. "So you're saying that someday I'll even like doing sit-ups?" I asked with disbelief. "Nope, I still hate those too. But I realize that exercise is good for me," Dad sighed. "We can't always do just what we like. Figuring that out is a big part of growing up." "Well, that stinks. Dad really isn't any good at pep talks. I feel worse than before he came in." "What else?" he asked. "What do you mean? Your history class isn't the only thing causing your moodiness. What's really bugging you?" "Great. Now Dad becomes insightful. What did I do to deserve this? I can't tell him about mirth. He'd think I was crazy or lying, and I didn't want to add to my problems." "I feel like I don't have any friends," I blurted out. "What about Malik, Ethan, and Tyler?" "We don't have that much in common anymore. The guys are only interested in fantasy role-playing games, and I'm not anymore. It seems like we just don't have anything to do together if we aren't playing games, and it stinks. I feel all alone," I said. I hadn't meant to say that, but it was true. I have been spending half my life living in a world filled with magic quests and magical creatures. I don't have much interest pretending to do the stuff I do for real on Mirth, and I'd had a big fight about that with the guys last night. Dad and I sat there in silence for a few minutes before he put his hand on my shoulder and said, "Mark, your interests might be changing, but those boys are good friends. They aren't going to abandon you. You'll see." Wait, did Dad just call me Mark? This must be serious. "Now, who's the girl?" he asked. "What?" I shouted. "There is no girl, Dad." "Of course there is," he laughed. "I'm guessing that one of your friends is also interested in Nancy, right?" "No, wait, what? How do you know about Nancy?" I asked. I was in utter shock. Oh, Mark, Nancy Wellington is the only girl I've ever heard you mention, even though your remarks are always complaints, he chuckled. So, did one of your friends ask her out? No, it's nothing like that. It's just that I want to ask Nancy out to the costume ball, but I keep choking up whenever I get the chance, I admitted as I braced myself for another telling of the Margaret Hartman story. But he surprised me. Dad asked, So, what is the worst that could happen if you ask her out? She turns you down? No, the worst that could happen is that she turns me down, laughs at me for not being good enough for her, and everyone thinks I'm a loser, I said. Parents genuinely don't understand. He said, Mark, you are certainly good enough for her. She might not realize it, or she might just not be into you, but that's okay. There are a lot of jerks out there, and there are a lot of great people who will never have any interest in dating you. It's not a reflection on you. Remember that only the people who don't know you will laugh, and they don't matter. Your friends will respect you for trying. Yeah, I guess so, I mumbled. And what's the worst that could happen if you don't ask her out? Dad pressed. We won't go to the dance, I answered. What a stupid question. But at least the most popular girl in school won't laugh at me. You're right that you have virtually no chance to go to the dance with her if you don't even try to ask. But you're wrong about your friends. They will think you're a loser for not trying, and they are the people you should care about, he said. Not only was Dad right, I realized that Malik and the guys already do think I'm a loser. So, you can ask her out, look cool to your friends, find out once and for all whether she's interested, and maybe even go to the dance with her. Or, you can wimp out, look like a schmuck with no chance of taking her to the dance, and always wonder what would have happened, he said. Dad, no one says cool or wimp like that anymore, I groaned. He had a point, though, and we just sat there for a few minutes, not saying anything else. I finally asked, Did you ever work up the nerve to talk to Margaret Hartman? Dad leaned back and sighed, Yes, I talked to her. Margaret and I went to the same school for 3 more years, and even though we hung out in different circles, we had many classes together. In fact, 1 year we sat next to each other in history class and were sent to detention for talking in class. Well, I was sent to detention. She somehow got out of it, as usual. But no, I never told her how I felt about her. She started dating a guy named Jason Steiner, who was everything I was not. He was tall, good-looking, and popular. I was the poor, greasy immigrant kid who most people seemed to think should take his family and go back to Greece. I just sat there for 3 long years watching the girl I dreamed of cavorting with Mr. Popular. Wow, Dad was really messed up about this girl. So do you still think about her, I asked. I wasn't sure I wanted to hear his answer, but Dad laughed and said, No, not really. I saw her at her 20th high school class reunion. We chatted for a while, and she still seemed to be everything I remembered. She was married, although not to Jason. I was, of course, married to your mother with 2 great children, so I decided to tell her how I felt back in school as a sort of funny story. There was no pressure of rejection, and I thought it would feel good to tell her how I felt back then. Then, just before I was going to tell her, she leaned close to look at my yearbook photo, which was printed on my name tag, and admitted that she couldn't remember me at all. I just sat there amazed that she couldn't remember anything about me after spending 4 years in school together. After 20 years, I discovered that Margaret Hartman could still crush my heart like a soda can, and I decided she wasn't worth the story. This time, however, I wasn't bailing. I just no longer cared about this woman, and I felt great. Wow, now that was a Margaret Hartman story I'd never heard. Listen, you'd better get back to your homework. Do you need the Wi-Fi password? Dad asked. No, I have all the information I need. I just have to make sense out of it, I answered. Good, laughed Dad. Mom would have yelled at me for caving if I'd given it to you. I know how that feels, I laughed. I couldn't believe it. I was feeling better. I stared at my history research after he left and groaned again. I had no idea how to make sense of it. Maybe Mr. Narwani was right, and I'd just collected a bunch of random facts. I started poking around with the only parts of history that ever made sense to me, the numbers, and suddenly saw the pattern. Dad, I need the internet! I shouted.